Michael Savage Show contains adult language, adult content, psychological nudity. Listener discretion is advised.
And now, America's most exciting radio talk show, The Savage Nation. Here is Michael Savage. Michael Savage Show.
You don't know what tonight's going to bring, let alone tomorrow. I mean, we make plans. Sure, we plan. Everyone thinks they're going to live a ripe old age. They're going to be surrounded. They're going to get a little ill, not totally ill, not very badly ill, not never cancer, no heart attack, nothing like that. That happens to other people. They're just going to slowly slow down, and oh, they're going to wind up sitting quietly in a resort somewhere, a resort-like retirement community. They'll be able to take care of themselves right to the end, and they'll be surrounded by loving friends and family, and they will die in their sleep at approximately 99 years of age. It happens, perhaps one out of a billion. I don't know what the number is now. Maybe one out of 500 million might go that way, or one out of 300 million. I don't really have the numbers, but it's not happening to you, Johnson. More likely, it will be a horrendous slow death, either from cancer or some other debilitating disease, or even worse yet, Alzheimer's disease, where you're left for hours at a time in a nursing home in a corner, staring at a curtain, unable to move and not knowing who you are, where an orderly will beat you about the head and neck slowly with something that hides the blunt trauma and steals the small change that your adult son or daughter brings you. So, you know, given that that's the fact of reality here, and I'm in a long day's journey into night mood, which I've been in since I'm about 16 years old. But particularly now, I'm not sad, I'm not agitated, I'm just affected by this, because, you know, look, the Grim Reaper comes around and he gets closer and closer, and you see him circling, and you start saying, "There we go again," you know. And so, what is it that you want to do with the rest of your life? You have to ask yourself. If you're a driven man as I am, and I've been driven all my life, let me tell you right now, this is nothing new to me. I've been driven from very early on to do things in my life. And I'm no saint. Don't confuse me with trying to tell you I'm such a saint. I'm not Al Gore, okay? I'm none of those people. I'm just like you. Maybe I'm a little luckier, and maybe I'm a little more hardworking than some people, but I'm not different than the average intelligent person out there in some ways. In some ways, I'm a genius. In some ways, I'm a big idiot. I understand all of that. That's the human being. But I have a gift. There's no question I have a gift in radio. It's probably inherent. It's innate. Nobody taught me how to do radio, and look where I am after 13 years. I'm in the winner's circle, just where I knew I would be. Now, I could spend the next number of years just trying to get to number one, the number one slot. I could do that if I wanted, and I could probably win. I mean, I could change my time slot and go right up against Rush, and I'm telling you, Rush wouldn't stand a chance. In one year, he wouldn't be number one. I would be number one. But I don't have such a desire. It doesn't mean anything to me. It has no meaning to me, none whatsoever. I've always seen the big picture. I've always seen the longer picture. There's very little that I want for materially. I only want my health and the health of my children, to be honest with you. But then I say, well, what about my poor country? What good is all of this health? What good is a reasonable success if the have-nots are being brought in by the tens of millions? And if the have-nots are being told that they can take from those who have created it by these evildoers in the Democrat Party, there's nothing to work for. They'll take it all away from your inheritors. They will not inherit Jack Johnson. They'll give it away to the bums who didn't work for it. And that motivates millions of people like me. Let me tell you right now, illegitimi non carborundum. We don't want the illegitimate taking away our livelihood, and we don't want the illegitimate stealing from us any more of our damn tax money. Here in the state of California, we pay not only federal tax, we pay 10% of our income as state income tax, 10% right off the top. But wait, there's a bigger insult. Last year, while you slept, they added another tax for people in a slightly higher bracket in the state of California of an additional 1% called a mental health tax. So that's 11%. Now, what the heck is a mental health tax? Where does the money go? Well, you say, well, it goes for mental health. No, it probably goes to gray-bearded child molesters so they can write papers and go to conferences in Thailand and rape young boys. That's where the extra 1% goes. I can guarantee you it doesn't go anywhere else. And where will it end? Nobody knows where it'll end. So these are the things that are agitating me. And I read you the opener, how long do we have, and that the Athenian Republic lasted not very long, but that in 1787, Alexander Tyler, a Scottish history professor, said a democracy is always temporary in nature. It simply cannot exist as a permanent form of government because a democracy will exist up until the time that voters discover that they can vote themselves generous gifts from the public treasury. And that's Hillary Clinton. That's the invented man called Obama. That's the Biden, that's the Edwards mentality, which is to live like commissars in the ex-Soviet Union and tell you that they're for the people. They are absolute Bolsheviks. They're right out of the Communist Party USA with a slight differential, believe me, and not a great one at that. So that's what I was thinking about. So now let me go a little bit more here of where I'm coming from and how I got there. In my neighborhood, I had seen a 57 Eldorado for a while in a garage. I know you're saying, how the heck did he jump to there? Well, watch where I'm going, and you'll see I'll come back to where I started from. And I had seen, as I inquired from a neighbor's neighbor, is it for sale, blah, blah, blah. So I went and looked at it yesterday. It's a 57 Eldorado, totally restored, frame up, really nice car. I have a 65 Caddy convertible. I have a weakness for 60s and 50s cars that are perfect. I don't really have the place to put it, but I looked at it, we talked. And this gentleman's from Sweden, very nice man. And before long, we started talking about the Muslim attempt to take over Sweden. I said, how did you Vikings let this happen to you? He said, we were too tolerant. He said, they came in asking for asylum, and we woke up, we can't even go into some cities. And he said, don't even get my mother started. My mother is vehement on this issue, that if we don't crack down on them and deport these imams, we're going to lose Sweden. And on and on and on. And I said, well, look at the illegal aliens in America. I said, Ted Kennedy is working around the clock to grant amnesty to 30 million illegal aliens, which will be the death of the United States of America as we know it. It will be over. It will be over. As far as I'm concerned, it's a declaration of war against our sovereignty. To me, it's a declaration of war against the people. I don't know how else to put it. What do you think? I like saying this? You think I don't know I'm putting myself in danger? I'm nobody. But I'm not alone. Tens of millions of you understand what's at stake. You don't want the illegal aliens to be granted amnesty. You know what that'll do to this country. You know it'll give them the right to bring in 5, 10, as many relatives as they want. Within 5 years, you'll be living in Tijuana with all of the horrendous problems of Mexico on a street corner near you. And if you want to live in Mexico, then I suggest you go live in Mexico. But for God's sakes, don't make this great nation into that corrupt socialist dictatorship called Mexico. And so having churned all of this over the weekend, I woke up at 3:30 in the morning. I couldn't sleep because of the mortality thing and the this and the that. And I started to add it up, and I said to myself, I'm leveling with you like I'm talking with you in a bar. And this is one of the things I can do very well, and you listen because it's like a guy talking to you from the heart and from real. So I know you're listening, those of you who want to listen, and those who don't, well, I can't help you. If you want to hear a regular, this is the Savage Nation, and we'll be talking, I'm not going to do that. There are other people who do that very well. This is much different. It's conversational, and it's based upon the reality of the man doing the show. So you'll go along with me. And I need a break coming up, but let me start with this. I said, did you add up the decades of your life? Now look at where you were from like age 11 to 21. Look at the change in your life in those 10 years. I said 11 to 21 was one of the most dramatic. You can't even do that lump. That's too big. Because at that age, 11 to 15 is already a change in your life unlike perhaps any you're ever going to experience again, except perhaps from middle age to old age. So let me back up. From like fifth, okay, let's start when I graduated high school, college. I don't even know how old I was. I entered college when I was, I've forgotten completely. I don't even know anymore. I'm losing track of it. I was like 16 when I went into, I was 16 when I got out of high school. I skipped the grade, and the way I was born, the month I was born, they put me in, blah, blah, blah. So I entered college at 16. I graduated college at 21. It took me 5 years because my father got a heart attack and I had to leave school for a semester and go run his little store and sell various things and leave school. But the fact of the matter is, I said, well, now look where you went. Yeah, now I was thinking, like from there, from when you got out of college, 21, you were just a social worker on the Upper West Side of Manhattan. You were working with welfare grifters who were ripping the system off then, and you knew it. That's why you quit the welfare department. I have story after story. You say, like the road, how I became a conservative. Well, let me tell you where it started. It started when I was a welfare worker. They didn't call it anything else then. It's called welfare. You went and you gave them a little check, and you found out they were grifting everything under the sun on the side, making believe they were poor, those bums. Those bums didn't need the money. I needed the money. I lived worse than they did. And so they had furniture. I had a soapbox on the, for a bed table. They had furniture we had to buy for them. But I don't want to go into that. It's too distracting. From age 21, never mind to 31, but from age 21 to 25, the things that occurred in my life, what I did with myself in those few years, I dragged myself out from a no-career future as a lowly teacher. I went back to school to get a master's degree, and I didn't leave college till I got two master's degrees and a PhD from a great university. Now, that's when my trouble began. Little did I know that the society had turned on white males who had no connections. Every sign on every university said white males need not apply.
You're listening to an encore broadcast of The Michael Savage Show. You're listening to an encore broadcast of The Michael Savage Show.
There's a lot of news, there's no news. It's the best of times, it's the worst of times. You know, we could talk about news, we could talk not about the news, we could talk about Chinese food, Italian food, I'd say Irish food, but there is none. I'm joking, don't get mad. I've been in enough Irish bars to tell you that they're not known for that, okay? Let's not get angry now all of a sudden. Don't bring up anger now. Start telling me dishes with lamb, okay? Chicago, Tom, welcome to the Savage Nation.
Yeah, Michael, I wanted to know what health benefits, if any, are provided by the squid ink and squid ink pasta.
I give you the philosophy of 1,000 years of evolution. Don't seek excitement, seek fulfillment. And I get a question about squid ink. All right, that's the nature of the business I'm in. Wait, I will refer to the Bible, Deuteronomy 27:12. If a caller asketh thou about squiddeth ink after thou hast given thy heart and thy mind, tell him to shove it! I know, you don't actually find that in Deuteronomy. You will not actually find it. I don't think they deal with squid. I think it's one of the banned foods. Thou shalt not suffer a sorceress to live. I don't want to go into that. There's too many people in San Francisco. Everything that thou shalt not do, they do. And in Amenclaw, Washington, don't even ask. Wow. In Amenclaw, they actually look at Exodus 22 and do everything it told not to do. A sorceress, a beast. He that lieth with a beast. They love the beasts up in Amenclaw, Washington. In fact, they get them from rescue centers in order to lieth with them. It's horrible. An eye for an eye. You got to look those things up, an eye for an eye. Thou shalt not cover. I don't want to read the Bible. Leave me alone. I'm tired of religious now. I'm off religion. I think I'm giving up on the whole religious thing for a while. I am so jaundiced on religion and religious. I know you're going to be disappointed, but I'm not doing. I'm taking the whole summer off from it. I don't like fanaticism in any religion. I don't like it. We talk about radical Islam. How about radical everything else? You know, I know that the radical Christians don't kill and this and that today, but. You know, to me, the fanatics in religion worry me greatly, just as the fanatics in government worry me greatly. I don't like fanaticism. So I'll say, well, you're a fanatic because you believe in borders, language, culture. All right, so you define your enemy as a fanatic, whatever you want to say. I just don't, I'm not into this whole religious thing. I think it's a racket. This organized religion bothers me. Sure, I believe in God. I'm going to give me the litmus test. First of all, it's my business whether I do or not, but I do. Why? Because I'm afraid that if I gamble wrongly, I'll be cast into you-know-where for eternity. So I have that basic, let us say, primal or childish view of the world. If you're braver than me and you don't care what happens to you after you die, all right, whatever. I was raised another way, and that's the end of the story. That's how I shall be. I'm pretty sure there's a creator. But truthfully, I can get closer to God through an elephant and through a gorilla and giving to the Gorilla Fund and the Elephant Fund and seeing that anyone who poaches a gorilla and cuts his hand off, they hunt them down and they knock them off. You know, I mean, I gave money to a group that hires a military to go out and kill the poachers who cut off the hands of a mountain gorilla, because they should. And then the ones who cut the tusks off elephants are the wonderful, sensitive, kindly Asians in North Korea can make penis shrouds with them. So I made up a statement, he who saves a single elephant, it is as though he has saved the entire herd. Mark it down. It's a takeoff on the Maimonides thing, he who saves a single life, it is as though he saved the entire world, which is true. But at this point, I'd rather save an elephant. I have more faith now in the elephants and the gorillas than I do in human beings. I'm sick of it. I'm sick of the racket. I'm sick of the red and the black. You know, I read it years ago, the whole red and the black thing, where the only way to get ahead in Napoleonic France was, remember Stendhal's great book? I think it was Stendhal, wasn't it? The Red and the Black? French writer, the book was called The Red and the Black, and it was about a young man who's ambitious in France, and he's trying to look ahead in his life, and how does he get ahead? There's only two ways to get ahead in Napoleonic France, either through the red or the black, either wearing the red of the uniform or the black of the priesthood. And it's about this aggressive individual who's, ambitious, and he has to choose either the red or the black. Nothing's changed here, and in some ways, I mean, it's not the military's not going to give you any great, let us say, external rewards in our country. The people who are committed in the military are truly patriotic and truly do it for their own satisfaction. They don't do it for any societal rewards. It's the same with the police. All right, some do it for the pension, or most do. But the fact of the matter is there's an awful lot of cops and military who do it for the honor of defending the nation. But now go to the priesthood or the rabbinate or any one of those areas. What do you think, they're in it for God?
Savage.
You're listening to an encore broadcast of the Michael Savage Show.
WOR is the next caller. Paul, you're up. What's on your mind? Go ahead, please.
Hi, Mike. Okay, real quick, I got a lot to say and no time to say it. So you made a comment about boats and workmanship and not getting enough out of the workers. You said everybody thinks they're a craftsman just because they wash a boat. I got news for you. I was in the pizza business for 13 years, and I had to get out of it for the very same reason. You work next to a guy, he learns how to make a sandwich, he comes from another country somewhere, and you're trying to show him how to work and get better and everything like that. Not only they're not really good yet, but they start learning from you, and then as soon as they can make a sandwich or something, they try to take you over right away.
Yeah. Then they resent that you even own the store. They say you stole it from them. They were infected already with America hatred. That they're working for you. You gave them a start, and already he should own your store.
It brings together everything you've been talking about, this liberalism and all this forgiveness and all this liberal way of life, is that, you know, these liberals run around wiping their noses for everybody.
Liberals don't really work, Paul. They have government jobs. They work in these NGOs. And what they do is brainwash the illegal immigrant into thinking they're being ripped off. They're here as guests of the country illegally. And the fact of the matter is that's what they should be reminded of. Let me explain something to you. There used to be a thing called apprenticeship. There was a whole series of craftsmanship in this country and in Europe. The guilds protected it very carefully. The guilds have unfortunately just become unions, and there's no apprenticeship anymore to speak of. And I don't want to go into great details. I have a friend whose grandfather was a carpenter, came over from Greece. In order to get a carpenter's license in San Francisco at the turn of the century, you had to pass a certain number of tests, one of which was the ability to build a frame, cut a door out of raw wood, put the hinges on the door you cut out of raw wood, and prove to the man who was checking up on you that that door would swing freely in the frame that you built. Only then would you be moved up on the rankings of a craftsmanship scale. Now compare that today to the raw workers who are working construction sites who can hardly drive a nail straight. But that's the problem today. The workmanship is poor all around. I'll give you another example. Great brands like Sony and Nikon are no longer foolproof. I have a large Sony monitor in several studios that I work in. These are like, I don't know, 18, 20-inch screens. They're beautiful big screens. You say, oh, I look at Sony. It's like, whoa, that's like a Rolls Royce. Three of these screens have failed within a year. I had to send them back to the factory. That's a Sony now coming out of Japan. I'll give you another example. 2 or 3 years ago, I bought a Nikon D70 camera. Now, today I use a smaller one, a high quality, I don't know how, megabyte. It's a great little camera. The Nikon D70 cost $1,200 when I bought it. Today I had to bring it in because a flashing light's been on now for a month. I haven't even used it for a year. I wanted to take the big camera with me with a telephoto lens, which I own. They told me it's a warranty item with Nikon. They get three a week now of this D70 failing on them. And it has to be sent. It'll take 6 weeks, and then you're $200. This is what's going on now with once reliable brands like Sony and Nikon. So it's not just limited to workers who don't know how to wash a boat who want to suddenly own your boat, or a pizza guy who learns how to make a sandwich and thinks he should own the Quiznos chain. It goes all the way down to the factories. Workmanship is suffering virtually up and down the line.
Savage.
Let me start with food, because that's something that I specialize in. And first of all, I had the best Chinese meal of my life at Shanghai 1930. Let me get it out of the way. Yes, my friends own the restaurant. No, I get nothing for this. I haven't been there in over a year. But, you know, there's such a difference between Chinese food that you know and high-end cuisine that it's worth talking about. The reason I went is because they gave me a private dining room for four people. So I wasn't seen. I was not even heard. I was like a child, not seen nor heard, which is the only way I can eat. I don't like restaurants because I can't stand listening to other people talk. Call it a quirk. Call it a quirk of mine. I don't go out to dinner to listen to people scream. I don't go out to dinner to go listen to people scream and laugh. It doesn't entertain me. I don't need that kind of sensual stimulation. I'd prefer to eat a takeout meal in front of a television set. But anyway, I went out there, and I'm not going to describe the menu. There's one thing they have that no one else has, which is egg white rice. It's amazing. Very, very interesting dish. And then the usual, you know, the steamed fish, but and all sorts of other things. It was really lovely in a private room. Wonderful. And I suggest you try it if you can. They're very nice people who own it, and the food is really great. Shanghai 1930 in San Francisco. I have no ownership, nor do I get anything from this. And I just want you to know where it's a little different. Sunday, I went out on my boat with the captain. We would turn right at Point Bonita. If you go out under the Golden Gate Bridge, sailors know this. They do it all the time. I'm pretty much strictly a bay boater. The bay can be pretty exciting unto itself. On a windy day, the bay is like an inland sea. I mean, you can get some nice swell, some nice waves, spray in your face, crossing the bay to and from San Francisco. But if you go out under the Golden Gate Bridge and you drive about, oh, I don't know, 5 miles, you hit Point Bonita, which is the last point of land, and then you turn north in the channel. And about 5 miles out is a place you're never supposed to go over. It's like no man's land called the Potato Patch, because they sometimes get monster rollers coming in over there, so you don't go there. And we went up the coast, and it wasn't very exciting. It was fulfilling. I got to tell you something. When I came back from the ride in my boat, which I've had 6 years, the Grand Banks is the greatest yacht ever made, by the way. Again, the boat's 6 years old, and everyone says, oh, Mike, how long do you think you're going to live? Get yourself another boat. You deserve it. You know, you can afford it. You know, I got to talk about something. Why get rid of something that's perfect? It's 6 years old. It has less than 400 hours on it, and I'm not here to auction the boat off. But this boat holds the water like no other boat I've ever been on. And the newer boats changed the hull design from a Ed Monk design, which is a semi-displacement trawler hull. The boat will still do 15 to 18 knots with twin 365 turbo horsepower Cummins diesels, American-made, the best engines in the world. The boat's got started every time I ever started it in 6 years. Imagine having a boat that starts every time in six. You've tried it in 6 years. Go out, come back, get in bed at night to go to sleep. Now, normally I have a high degree of anxiety am I being? That's how I've lived all my life. I'm kind of an edgy person. I've been this way my whole life. And if it would have killed people, it was supposed to be so bad for you, anxiety and stress, I would have been dead at 11. So this is a thing that drug peddlers sell you, called the American Medical Association. They tell you you're supposed to lead a stress-free life. Frogs don't even lead a stress-free life. Nobody leads a stress-free life. It's a myth in order to sell you pills and psychotherapy. But I come back from the boat ride. I have zero anxiety in my being. And when I go to sleep at night, you know what I think about? I don't think about being banned in England. I don't think about Obama, the neo-Marxist. I don't think about him killing America's economy. I don't think of any of that. In other words, my normal fears are gone. All I could think about was the waves and the color of the water and how the boat moved in the water. There was a certain movement of the hull through the water, the way she gripped and moved and gripped and moved and gripped and moved and gripped and moved. The motion became unto itself a meditation. And I thought about something at night, and this is the point of the story. There was nothing exciting. There was nothing inherently exciting about the boat ride, but it was fulfilling. And that comes down to day-to-day life. Many of us are told by Moloch, who owns Fox News and newspapers and magazines and book companies and everything you turn, he's trying to get you excited into buying something. So he tells you to look for excitement. And the only way to get excitement is by buying something that one of his advertisers peddle. But let me tell you something. You should be seeking fulfillment, not excitement. And that's the problem with American society today. The children have been taught to seek excitement, not fulfillment. So they seek sex instead of marriage and children, because they don't understand the fulfillment of being married and having children. All they've been brainwashed into thinking is that excitement is the end of human existence. And it comes back again to the same thing, whether it be sports or salacious entertainment or bad fast food. All of these things are minimally exciting, but none of them are fulfilling. Now, you've heard all of this before. I'm pontificating on it because it came home to me over the weekend in a simple way. A simple boat ride up the coast, off the coast of San Francisco, gave me fulfillment, not excitement. And so the moral of the story is, the less excitement that you seek, the more fulfillment you will have. This is Father Savage back in a moment.
You're listening to an encore broadcast of The Michael Savage Show.
Savage.
Core broadcast of The Michael Savage Show.
Play some music. Make believe it's Rock and Roll Friday. I'm already hitting a bad... There you... That's perfect. I love this. Who is it? Don't say it. Hold it. Somewhere, it's an Alzheimer's test. Hold on. Don't say a word. Not a word. No, not a word. No hints. Bobby Darin. Okay, Beyond the Sea. I'm slower, I can tell you, just by telling. I test my mind like that. Was slow. I can see I'm a little in trouble now. I'm going to do this once or twice a week now and see my memory right on the air. You'll see it go downhill over the years. Till eventually I'm like, hello, this is the Savage Nation. I'm Michael Savage. Welcome to the show. We got quite a day for you here. Not that I'll sound like Rush Limbaugh. I get nothing out of it. I don't get a rise out of it. This is nothing to me. How long ago? Gratazura, forget about it. You know, heard it. At that time it was okay. It's nothing anymore. None of that does anything for me. Nothing. I've reached a point where nothing moves me at all. An animal, maybe, the dog. Caring for an animal. Humans, forget about it. My father taught me. I fought with him day and night. He said to me, it's a dog-eat-dog world. And I was like Mr. Idealist from Queens College. All the teachers were communists from those days. Every one of them was a commie. Every last one of them, a left-wing radical. Came to America, kissed the earth, and then spit on America. Got a job at Queens College and tried to inculcate the very thing they ran from in Europe. So I was like brainwashed as a kid in college. Oh, yeah, the poor are oppressed. People kept them down. Right, sure. Yeah, everyone keeps them down. How could some poor rise up if all the poor are kept down? How do you explain that? So, you know, whatever. He said, oh, dog-eat-dog world. You'll find out. No, it won't. People are nice. Yeah, right, sure, people are nice. Cynic is cynic, what can I tell you? It is a dog-eat-dog world, like I didn't know it. It's not that I've done so badly. I mean, I'm pretty aggressive, and I'm very ambitious, and I have been all my life, and I'm proud of it. That makes it sound like it's like a crime. Being ambitious is a crime to the loser. Do you know that? I knew him when he was young. He was always trying to get ahead. Duh! What were you trying to do, smoke dope? Idiot? That's some guy I knew. He writes obituaries for a religious newspaper. Never amounted to Jack, you know what. Thought he'd be Hemingway. He wound up Hemingway's shoeshine boy. So someone wrote an article on me 2 years ago. He went and stabbed me in the back. He said, oh, yeah, he was always ambitious. Like, that's a curse. Mr. Fair-minded. Oh, my God, what people. They really resent people who get anything, and they don't. It's the truth. People are jealous. The seven cardinal sins. I'm guilty of them, some of them. You didn't hear me. I figured I'd get hit with the religious fanatics, and I said I'm through with fanaticism. I wish I could tell you why and explain the whole story, what happened, but I can't. It's too personal for me to get into it. And I think the names have to be protected to protect the guilty here. And I don't think there's any way I can tell you what happened without giving away who I am speaking about. So I think I'll leave that one go because I don't actually dislike the individuals that I'm now completely through with forever in the religious world, but they're never going to see a red cent from me, I can tell you that. It's unbelievable to me. Let me put it to you, how can I do it in a way? I was donating small amounts of money to certain groups, okay? Add the elephants to this. I'm reaching that point where they're 501c3s. They have to be a nonprofit group. Don't write me any letters from a prison that you need money because you were a misunderstood genius. Please, it has to be a 501c3. Some basically animal groups and environmental groups, you know, the pelicans, the manatees, the elephants, the leatherback turtles, the bears that are being tortured by the wonderful kind Chinese that they torture in cages over there in the wonderful sensitive land. You know, we're the bad ones. They're the good ones. It's Obama, the same thing. So one of the groups, let us say, that I was going to donate a small amount of money to was a religious group. And as part of my charter as a man giving money, I have to find out how the money is going to be spent. You have to ask. You can't just give money to a group without getting an answer from them in advance. Otherwise, you could be violating the tax code. And also their 501c3 status could be challenged, incidentally. And you know many charities are rackets. You know that. And if the government really wants to make money, they really ought to go with a fine-tooth comb through the 501c3s in this country. I can guarantee you they'd pull in about $200 billion the first year. Okay? Put me in charge of that one, Mr. Obama. I'd gladly work for the government for a buck a year. I could bring in probably $100 billion for the dollar. I know just where to start. You're starting with these. So I start inquiring, blah, 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 what are you going to do with the money? And comes back to me that one of the religious individuals who was going to receive the money tells me that he's going to take some of the donation I'm giving, the whole thing, to take a year off and to be with his wife worry-free for a year because that's what he was taught. And I couldn't believe what I was reading. So I send back a note to him today, and I say, you have some nerve asking me to subsidize a year without working. I kill myself each day trying to do right in the world, and nobody subsidizes me. Moreover, nonprofit tax laws prohibit us from donating to the upkeep of an individual. All funds must be limited to the meaning of the tax code, only for organizations, not individuals. And then I go on and I say, religion is about service and about work. Religious people are supposed to have a profession or a trade. And I say, I have some advice for you. Learn a trade or you'll be running after people for money the rest of your life. You are a good person, but you need someone to tell you this. The old days are over. Money is tight. People don't have as much as they did 10 to 20 years ago. As the years go by, it will get harder, not easier. You still have time to learn a trade. Use it wisely. So, I mean, it's a hard thing to send somebody, but I think I did this young man a favor. To spend the rest of your life as a mendicant and asking people to subsidize your lifestyle and using God as a weapon, to be honest with you. I'm sorry, I'm not into it. I work too hard for every dime, and I know everyone else who works for a living in my family. Everybody works all day long, every day of the week. So just because you hold God up as a over your head, like you know God and I don't, you know what? I know God as well as you do, and I can find God by going out into the bay and looking at a bird laying an egg. If I see a baby seal swimming toward the boat, I see God. If I see a group of pelicans flying in a V formation and they're shifting point as they're flying, I see God going back millions of years. I see the wisdom of God in how the animals have the brains to shift point so that there's always a leader in the pack. Okay? So I don't necessarily need the mumbo jumbo to get there.
Give me fuel, give me fire, give me that which I desire.
You're listening to an encore broadcast of The Michael Savage Show.
I have an old friend I haven't seen in many years. I knew him very well. Gee, God, it's a long time ago. When I was a young graduate student, he was a professor, and he's an expert in, let's just say, tropical diseases. We'll leave it generic. So to make a long story short, I recontacted my old friend, and we talked. Politically, we're on the opposite sides of the spectrum. But here's the point of the story. I want to read you I sent him my book, and he sent me his, and I just got it today by overnight mail. I won't read you the title of his book, but I want to read you the inscription. It says, to Michael, separated by geography and maybe some political philosophy, but as always, my cherished friend. I think it was one of the most beautiful inscriptions I've ever read in my life. And all of the friendship that I enjoyed with this man and his wife of many years ago came flooding back into my memories. The pictures of the children when they were young and the fun we had. I could still hear the man laughing. Would you believe it? And it just shows you that although you can disagree with someone politically, you don't have to hate them. That's the interesting story. You understand what I'm saying to you or not? You get it? Reasonable people can violently disagree politically, but they don't kill each other. Maybe I'll have him on the show. I don't want to, you know, give up to you. I haven't seen him in years. So many good memories, you know, all from one inscription. How is a man write such a... To Michael, separated by... Teddy, stop it. My dog is acting up again. To Michael, separated by geography and maybe, some political philosophy, but as always, my cherished friend. And that was beautiful. I hope he's listening to the show. I don't even know if he listens there in Crackerville where he lives.
Savage.
Warning. The Michael Savage Show contains adult language, adult content, psychological nudity. Listener discretion is advised.
And now, America's most exciting radio talk show, The Savage Nation. Here is Michael Savage. Michael Savage Show.
Today we're going to go from Sartre to the Sizzler, meaning, well, that's the passage in America, from Sartre to the Sizzler. It started out with him reading Sartre, Hemingway, Henry Miller. He did his big trip to Europe. He walked along the Seine, shopped in the bookstalls, stayed in the pensions, love in the afternoon, across the river and into the trees, for whom the bell tolls, a farewell to arms, Hemingway, sailfish, Cuba, Fiji, exploration, the heights, authorship. It ends in the Sizzler along the highway. He can't take restaurants anymore. He can't take people anymore. He can't take owners who talk too much and produce so little. The Sizzler, the last stop on the train, from Sartre to the Sizzler without the sizzle. And here's how it ends. The 6-ounce senior steak The 6-ounce senior steak special, $9.95. All you can eat salad bar included, plus a baked potato. The meat tasted as though it had been killed during the Roosevelt administration. In a cold storage locker in Denver since 1945. In a government warehouse purchased by the Sizzler's owner from the war profiteer's grandson. In a New York stock trade. Sizzler, Spitzer, 6-ounce steak, killed in 1945. That's how it ends. Sizzler, 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 without the sizzle, without the Sartre, reaching for the stars and ending up on a rocking horse, trying to ride a thunderbolt to heaven and ending up in an air-conditioned Prius. From a Vespa to a Mercedes, from flying boats to frying oats, from flying fish to Gorton's fish sticks, from Marx's dialectics to Bush's dyslexics, from a vicious chow to a poodle now, from metaphysics to Metamucil, from deep conversation to TV vibrations, from Tonga's beaches to Miami Beach, from metaphysics to Metamucil, from a rowboat to a powerboat, from Columbia River salmon jumping in the sun to packaged lox without fun, from jumping out of airplanes to creeping in the slow lane, from skiing down Mount Rose to holding garden hose, from scooters in Mallorca to Hooters in a Walker, from Sartre to the Sizzler. I know you didn't expect it. You thought I would do something else today. You want me to talk about extremism and the media and Letterman the slime ball? I'll do all of that, believe me. But I needed some cafe music today. And it leads me to the first question, for those of you who understood any of what just played here in this show, which is so out of the box that it's impossible to comprehend if you would comprehend it. How do you reconcile your youthful dreams with your life as it is now, is the question. I don't want to do politics today at all. That's why I'd rather tell jokes about the Sizzler. And that's why I said to you, many of you understand what I was talking about, of how do you reconcile your youthful dreams with your life as it is now. I mean, you started out wanting to be a baseball player, an astronaut, and you're probably selling vacuum cleaners or .com or websites. I don't know what you're doing. And so I made up a whole bunch of funny couplets, from the Vespa to the Mercedes, from flying boats to frying oats, from Marx's dialectics to Bush's dyslexics, from a vicious chow to a poodle now, from metaphysics to Metamucil, from Tonga's beaches to Miami Beach, from metaphysics to Metamucil, from a rowboat to a powerboat, from Columbia River salmon jumping in the sun to packaged lox without fun, to scooters in Mallorca to from scooters in Mallorca to Hooters in a Walker. No, not funny. I think some of it's funny. Okay. I tried comedy. You don't want comedy. You want hard right-wing talk. Is that what you tuned in for? You want hard right-wing talk? You want me to talk about the real loss of freedom of speech as opposed to the ersatz variety? I'm sick of this. New York, Tom, welcome to the Savage Nation.
Yeah, Michael, that introduction was brilliant. From Sartre, No Exit, to Hemingway, The Sun Also Rises. It was absolutely unbelievable to end up in the Sizzler.
So, Tom, in other words, you understood the entire gestalt of what I was trying to say.
Absolutely. It was brilliant. And
Tom, what it comes down to is this. We're at almost an end point here in American politics. We had Bush, a phony conservative. We have Obama, who's a very real Marxist with protectors in the media, including Fox News, who won't say the M word, even though the guy is a naked Marxist. It's astounding to me what's going on. It's almost not worthwhile talking about politics since the entire construct is a lie.
Michael, if there's anybody that can save America, it's you. Believe.
Oh, come on. I'm just a talk show host. I can't save anything. When you have Barack Obama getting away with what he's getting away with, going to the Middle East and attacking America, and that's why I didn't want to do politics today, because I get very angry. I get very caught up in what I believe in. Ask anyone who knows me if I actually believe what I say, or you think I'm doing it for effect. I have a gift. I have a comedic gift. I don't exactly repress it, but I'll tell you what happens. The politics override my natural sense of humor. I'm actually a funny, nice guy inside when I can be, not when I want to be, when I can be. And you can't be that for very long for a very long period of time. If I were to do 1 hour of radio a week, for example, 1 hour a week, I would do all comedy. It would have a slight political orientation, but it would be all comedy. Comedic in the political arena is, by the way, the finest place to be. The toughest place to be is to be comedic in the political arena without getting nasty. It's the toughest place to get into and the hardest place to stay. Let me tell you that. It's much easier to do the rhetorical stuff and deal with the politics in straight-out English, the plain truth, and tell you how I see it. I can do that until kingdom come. That's why I did the Sartre to the Sizzler. I don't know how many of you enjoyed it. He says gambler do a thing like that for one reason. It's, like you say, the younger audience won't get it because the reference points are not there. They don't know who Sartre is. They don't know what Marx's dialectics are. They don't know half of the references that you make. But my audience, let us say, is an older audience, which it is, and I know that. You're supposed to hide that? The older audience, the audience that I have, which is like 40, let's say mainly a 40 up white males, they're the ones with the money who buy everything. I'm supposed to worry about an 18-year-old bisexual with three earrings on his torso? I'm supposed to appeal to him? Are you crazy? They don't buy anything. They can't afford anything. So I may as well talk to my audience. What do I care about the 18 to 22-year-old guy with the rings all over his torso? I say to myself. So that's why I did this. It brought up a greater question, if you want to get into the question of philosophy, in a minor philosophy, popular philosophy, put it to you that way. Everyone listening to this show over the age of 40 had dreams as a youth and is now leading a different life than they dreamed of. 99% of us do not live the life of our dreams. 99% of us don't live the life of our dreams. Why? Because they're called dreams. Because a child has these dreams. A man has to get real in the real world of making a living and having a family. That's different than wanting to be an astronaut or a ball player. Now, some of you have become what you wanted to be, admittedly, and I'm sure I'll get those calls, but that is the smallest percentile.
You're listening to an encore broadcast of The Michael Savage Show. You're listening to an encore broadcast of The Michael Savage Show.
I ate too much for lunch. I'm sleepy. But anyway, so, you see, here's the problem. Is when you try to do good for yourself, sometimes you do bad. Take me, for example. I went to an Asian restaurant to eat some lunch. I don't know, you know, the Asian restaurant. As I tell them, no fat. I mean, no oil or less oil and no sugar. And it usually comes out fairly good. So I finish eating and I'm starving. I had the plate lunch and I'm starving. I go out. I walk right into McDonald's nearby. I said, why am I doing this? I said to myself, why am I doing this? I just ate lunch in the Asian restaurant. Answer, because I'm starving. And I sneakily ordered a fish burger, but then I said, without cheese and without sauce, with extra onions. In other words, I was, it's like the devil on my left shoulder said, ah, have the fish burger. The angel on my right shoulder said, all right, at least cut out the cheese, please. The alarm bells were going off. And add onions to it. Onions. So I said, all right. Then the Mexican woman says to me, do you want the sandwich? I said, what do you mean? I knew what she meant. I said, no, give me the French fries, too. Now, I got to tell you something. With the Diet Coke, with the thing, I scoffed it down like it was a dessert. It was unbelievable after the good Asian meal. Now, there's no moral to the story other than there's only so much you can do in the world that's good for you. You know what I mean? And then at a certain point, you just got to enjoy a meal once in a while. Like last night, I went to a local hole-in-the-wall, disgusting Thai place that no one goes to except a few local people. The food's excellent. We feel very bad for the guy. His children are always in there doing homework. They're very hardworking people, and his food is very good. It's awful. It's like next to a laundromat. There's nothing more depressing than eating in a restaurant, in a mall, strip mall, next to a laundromat. You say, well, why do you do that to yourself? You can afford any restaurant in the city. Answer, because his food is good, and I don't care about style. I care about the food. I go to eat. I don't go to be seen. I don't go to be heard. And I don't go to, certainly don't want to hear people talk, which is unfortunately this dump. My luck at a table nearby in this empty restaurant was a classic Marin County liberal couple from hell. Let me see if I could describe them. Just say a classic liberal couple from hell. Now, they're in a dump of a restaurant. Every platitude known to liberals came out of that woman's filthy mouth. from global warming while she's stuffing her fat yap, stuffing a fat yap with food. She's talking about global warming. Then she goes on to, did you hear the story about blacks being underrepresented in law firms, Bob? Oh, yes. Blacks get into major league law firms, but they don't make partnership. Blah, blah, blah. So I start to fume. I'm boiling, and I'm trying not to say a word. I'm like behind a tree in this dump, like a cheap tree, a fake tree, and I'm trying not to see them, but I can hear them. And she won't shut up. Now, I got to tell you, I had a few drinks before dinner, and it made me somewhat loquacious. So I started to talk to my long-suffering Mrs. S as loudly as I could to counter the global warming argument and to counter the blacks in the law firm argument. Then I got outright insulting. And, you know, one thing led to another. Eventually they left. Fortunately, they were smart enough to not make it any worse than it was. Why did they have to do a political discourse in a restaurant? Now, I do this for a living on the radio. You have an option to turn the show off or to turn the show on, to turn the volume up or turn the volume down. When you go to a restaurant, you don't want to hear a moron shooting his mouth off about politics. I find it the most offensive thing in the world for people to speak loud in restaurants, by the way. Some of them scream. But some of them scream about political points of view. Global warming, blacks not getting ahead, you name it. You name the issue. And then to top it off, as they were leaving the restaurant, they say to the owner of the Thai restaurant, oh, we're sailing to Thailand or going on a sailing trip in Thailand next week. And I don't know, some whatever, Phuket, I don't know where they were going. And they do the bow with the hands together. He looked at them like they were crazy. He could care less whether they're going there. But you see, they were eating in the Thai restaurant for cultural and social reasons, to bond with the simple people of the third world. So that's last night. That's two in a row. I had the Thai brain beating last night. And then for lunch today, I had to go from the Vietnamese lunch, which was excellent, by the way, but skimpy. I'm not 98 pounds living on a handful of rice, fighting, with the NVA here in the woods. I need a real meal, an American meal. I have a radio show to do. Please, you know, lay it on. So I went from a somewhat healthy meal to a pig out meal. If I had eaten regularly, I wouldn't have wound up at McDonald's. Garth in Miami, Florida, welcome to the Savage Nation. Go ahead, please.
A pleasure again.
All right, look, let me review. You're a liberal. You never agree with me. Tonight you agree with me. And tell me why all of a sudden you're finding out I'm not such an extremist.
No, I wouldn't say I never agree with you. I agree with you always about 20% of the time. And I think that and I'm finding out the reason tonight is because you are your own man. And anybody who's their own man is going to be on one side of the issue one day, one side of the issue. You're not a Limbaugh. You're not carrying water for anybody. You thought this out, and I've also thought, because I'm also very much into health and being 50 years old, my theories have either proven or not proven themselves. I'm living in the very real world of science. Am I feeling good? Am I a bunch of wrinkles? Can I walk down the street, or am I healthy? Am I vibrant? And I think that's where you come from, too. And
And also societally, am I societally more healthy as a result of what the left is trying to push down my throat? Or am I societally more healthy with what the conservatives want for the country? That's truthfully my basis for understanding what's going on in this country, is the point of view of physical health, emotional health, and societal health. And that's why I fall on the side of conservatism. Liberalism is a disaster, in my opinion, for societal health. But I guarantee you don't agree with me on that. But let me ask you, Garth, what did I say tonight? I'm very curious. That's why I asked you to hold over. What was it that triggered your sudden newfound, let's say, respect for my viewpoint?
Well, I have my first baby here. It took me a long time to grow up, and I have a 9.5-month baby. And
you're about 20 years old then. You're not really 50. So, wow, wait till that baby becomes 5 and 6 and 7. You're going to be a raging Republican.
Well, whatever, I welcome whatever.
By the time you're 65, you're liable to be a fascist. Be very careful. This is very bad. By the time your baby's a teenager, you're going to become, and you see what liberalism has done to the mind of the children, you're liable to join the fascist party if there is one.
Savage.
You're listening to an encore broadcast of the Michael Savage Show.
Eddie, my love, I love you so. I want it for you. You'll never know.
It is the Savage Nation Rock and Roll. I can't wait to Friday. It's getting longer each week, Friday. Almost the summertime. If I was normal, I'd be planning a vacation. As a normal person, what do? You go away for 2 weeks, go fishing? What do? Eh? What do normal people do? Disneyland? Your kids are young, all right. I went to Disneyland once. I needed to take Valium the whole time. I did. I couldn't tell you. I almost lost my mind. It's like I went to Masada. I had to take a Valium. A bus ride from Jerusalem took forever. Here is where the soldiers held off the Romans. Then what? Then they were all slaughtered. Great. How exciting. I can envision the soldiers throwing themselves off the cliff. That made sense. They just should have given up and had to, you know, open a pizzeria. It would have been a better choice. 2 years the siege went on. Then eventually they came up and killed them and threw them over the swords. Great. What am I standing here for over the Sea of Galilee? But Disneyland was about the same experience. Horrible, mind-numbing. Horrible. My mind feels like when I get around places like that, these amusement parks, when the kids were younger, it was like so hard for me to deal with that. People think that when you have children, you have to, like, act extra normal. That's what drives children into drugs. When you try to conform to some hallmark card of what you should do with your children, that's when the child reaches for drugs. I mean, try to lead the life that you want to lead with kids, you know, and let them tag along. Don't do what's good for them necessarily because they're going to hate it as much as you do. You ever see children on vacations with their parents? They're bored out of their minds. I'm talking about after they're, like, infants. What does an infant know? And a young child, whatever you do is fine. There's nothing more depressing than seeing a couple, let's say, like the hardest age to take kids on a vacation is like, let's say, the girl is 12 already, and she's just at that point where, okay, and then the boy is maybe 14, he's already been on the internet too long, in the locked bay, and so you take them on vacation. It's like taking along an adult couple who you detest, and you're paying the bill, and they don't want to talk to you over dinner. They don't want to be with you. You ever see them like in the hotels around the world, like in Hawaii, the 12 and 14-year-old kid and the couple? Hey, we're having a good time. You would like another macadamia nut sundae? Dad, please, you know. The girl's already looking at the bus boy and the boy is looking at the bus girl and they don't want to be there. They wish their parents gone without. So having a couple with you and they don't talk to you and you're paying the bill. And the whole flight home, everyone's like, ugh, depressed. On the plane. That's two week vacation. I had to take a painting when the kids were young. It got so bad. I was on such the precipice of the hotel balcony. I went and got a watercolor set. I still have those pictures somewhere. I bet you they bring a lot of money today for auction them off. Some of them were quite good. One was a picture of a car. I remember that to this day, I did a watercolor of an automobile without wheels, with four, like two adults and two children going nowhere, with a little island in the middle of it. That's quite an interesting picture when you think about it. Because you always like rent the car. Oh, now what? Let's go on the H1 freeway and see the traffic. Then let's go to a Porky Boy diner and see the hostile locals. It's unbelievable. I love they used to drive Dodge Chargers and eat double cheeseburgers and hate the Howley. I knew it was time to get out of there. Everything they took was from the Howley, and everything I hated was from the Howley. Forget about it. That's why I came here to wonderful San Francisco, the land of freedom. Yeah, huh? You hear the chains rattling as they beat each other with them. So I got calls. I don't know. None of them appealed to me. Nobody. No one heard a word I said yet today. Let's see. I'm going to read like a Rich in New York, Life in the 40s versus today. I can't deal with that. I don't think anyone wants to hear about his Uncle Murray wearing a brown suit. You know, okay, so kill that one. Marilyn, happiness versus middle of the road. I don't know. Savage advice of perfect food from Canada. What do I know, perfect food? I eat spaghetti 10 times a week. Is that a perfect food? I'm still living. You can give me spaghetti 3 times a day and I'll eat it. It's white bread that's no good for me. Gluten, now everyone's with the gluten. Every few years, there's another discovery as to why people were overweight and tired. And it works for a while until eventually you realize as you get older, you get overweight and tired. They all want a miracle cure. They all discover it. Oh, yes, your problem is that you have a leaky gut and you have a celiac. Whoa. Okay, that's sure if you cut down on wheat and you're going to lose a little weight if you stop eating bread. There's no question about it. We knew about that 50 years ago. Look at the beekeepers of Somalia. I mean, they're in pretty good shape. They live on, like, pollen, you know, and whatever else. They can. Of course they're thin because they're starving to death. My mother had a different theory about men. Stuff them, and stuff them again. That's how they placated the men in those days. Ethnic mothers all did that. They understood men were basically dangerous animals that could yell. In those days, some of them could hit. My father didn't, but some did. Violent, loud, they smelled. So the best way to control them was feeding them, like a zoo. Oh, whenever the guy got up, here, eat something. Whatever he was hungry or not, they made delicious food, and the guy ate it. And by that time, he was so, like, sluggish from the food, he was sated, and he slowed down. And there was less danger of a blow-up in the house if the guy was stuffed. Then they died at 40, 45 of a heart attack. If they were lucky, they went to 57, whatever. And the women lived another 25 years on the money that was left over in the house. It was a deal. They worked it out. She suffered the whole life from this bum and then lived on a little bit money at the end, and that was the whole story. They had a whole workout. Today, it's not like that anymore. Today, with the Viagra and God knows what else, the guy thinks, oh, yeah, he wants a 20-year-old wife at 72. What do I know people are going to get?
Savage.
I once told a story that I was in Fiji very late at night after a Yangona party. We were drinking Kava Kava all night. And I was in the village, I don't know, 3-4 miles away from my home village where I was staying on the collecting trip. And for some reason, I did not want to stay in that village. I just didn't want to stay there. I don't know what it was. And it was like the middle of the night, and I was compelled to walk back to the other village. Now, my guide didn't want to go with me. And he said, Michael, are you sure you want to go at night? I said, yes, I've got to get out of here. I haven't any idea why. And I left on my own, and I said, I'll find my way back. Well, I walked back along the edge of on a trail. It was on the edge of a bluff. I knew the ocean was below, and it was crashing below me. I could hear that, and I could vaguely see it. It was a dark night. It was not even a moonlit night. But I followed the footpath, and I got back safely. The next morning, my guide showed up, and he said to me, do you have any idea what you walked on? I said, no. He said, well, come back with me. We went back on the path. In some places, the path had less than 2 inches of soil to the right of the path, and I would have fallen a couple of hundred feet to my death. And, of course, the liberals would have been much better off, I'm sure, without me. But I didn't. Now, how do you explain that? I didn't see the path. I kind of felt my way in the dark. That's not a religious or supernatural experience on one hand. On the other hand, could you say that an angel was guiding my feet? How about the time I was hit by a car when I was a young boy, and I bounced halfway back across the street? I walked out from between parked cars in Jamaica, Queens. I got just bang. I don't know. Why did I get killed? Why did he just graze me? Why did the driver stop and say, are you okay? Or did I get killed then, and did I die, and is this all a dream? Did you ever have one of those? Maybe I'm dead. Maybe you're dead and imagining you're listening to me.
You're listening to an encore broadcast of The Michael Savage Show.
Savage.
You're listening to an encore broadcast of The Michael Savage Show.
Train, train. Train is soothing. There you go. I need sound effects to get myself into the headspace. Volatile. The headspace volatiles of the train sound. There's something so soothing about a train. Yet there are people you hear, you say, play a train. They need an anxiety, anti-anxiety pill. Because it's memories. Memory lane. We'd go out to Pennsylvania to visit the relatives. Did I love that Wednesday? I say, Ma, why do I have to go to school if we're leaving from Penn Station at 1 o'clock? Why must I go to school in the morning? Can I have the whole day off? No, you'll get something out of the day. Go for half a day. I hated it. It made no sense to me. I couldn't learn. I was nervous. My hands would sweat. No matter what the teacher said, my mind was only on the ham sandwich or the train or the cousins and there. So I'd go. Then she'd come for us at noon. I'd never forget that. I'd be sitting there with the little heart beating. And there was Mom. She'd come to school and get us. And then, I don't know how we got down to Penn Station. I don't know. Relative, no, it took subways or something. My dad had to work. And we go down to Penn Station. It was so exciting for a little kid, 5, 6, 7 years old, coming out of the Bronx to go out to Pennsylvania by trains in those days. I got to tell you, it was unbelievable. Now, you get into Penn Station, the hustle and the bustle and the excitement of people pushing and pulling. Now, I got to tell you, in those days, I guess I'm sounding old, they used to have steam trains that ran on coal. They were coal-driven trains. However, the train in Penn Station was, of course, not coal-driven. New York had banned the coal-driven train. They were electric. But the minute the train went under the Hudson River and came out on the other side out of the tunnel, the engines would be switched over to a coal-driven train. I frankly love the stink of the smoke from the coal train. There's a certain byproduct of, you got to understand what I'm saying. Many people will get this all wrong, of course, as they do almost everything I say, just to show that I'm not what I really am. But to this day, for example, if I'm on a large ocean liner, which I haven't been on in a number of years, I used to like occasionally to get a backdraft of the smell coming out of the chimney. I don't mean I stood there to die, but there was something about it. I can't put my finger on it. It's like secondhand smoke. You don't really want it, but if you inhale it, you say, what the heck, it's not bad. So we get on the train, boom, 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 and there goes the smoke. And this thing was belching out black smoke for miles. Of course, we understand why we had to get rid of that. Now you settle down for the two-hour ride out to the Pennsylvania country land. My God, was it fun. I had my comic books. I had my coloring books. The porter would come around and, you'd get the sandwich, then the countryside shooting. But to this day, I love trains, but I haven't been on one in 10 years. Who has the time for a train today? I have time only for you, the audience. I am dedicated 24/7 to this. This is my addiction. Then you'd get there, and we'd get to Pennsylvania, and I'll tell you, the most exciting part was getting there. I still have nightmares to this day. And the train would get in, and the smoke, and the people pushing, and the carts, and the da-da-da. Where are the relatives? Where are they? I don't see them. Where is he? Where? And you didn't see your relative. And to a kid going to a strange state, and your relative is not there instantly, you think you're like homeless. And then out of the fog and the smoke, oh, there he is, and you get together. It was the greatest moment on earth. Then we get in the little car, and we go, everybody was happy, and everyone loved each other, and everyone was alive. And now they're not alive, and that's the end of that story, and I'm alive, and that's it, and my family's alive, and thank God I'll be with them, not on a train, but if there's any luck, I'll be on a boat. This is a great story, since I'm a dog lover, and I once had a border collie, which was an amazing dog, Bandit. I don't want to tell you what happened to it, because I don't know. I remember I moved to Long Island, and he had been a California dog who used to run freely over the valleys. He'd escape every yard Bandit was ever in. The kids loved him. This dog was so wonderful, Bandit. And no matter what we put him in, he could jump the gate. And he always used to run across the valley and meet up with a girl dog. He was so smart, he would free her from her backyard. I don't know how he did it. And they'd go running around, I swear to God, in the valleys together. So he grew up like that. Then I had to move back to New York for a couple of years, and I lived on Long Island. That's not to be confused with Long Island. I lived on Long Island. And there are long guys there. And the dog was chained in the front of the house, and I had to go off to work. I came home, there was a chain and no dog. And my worst fear is probably that some animals took the Bandit and used it in some terrible torture. That's the worst thing that I don't even want to think about it. But this dog was smart and tough. He once fought a Rottweiler in the neighborhood and scared the Rottweiler. The Rottweiler didn't run away, but the Rottweiler backed down. I don't know how he did it. He did. So the dogs are geniuses. They're apparently the collies are the smartest of the breeds, or poodles. I don't know. But there's a new study out of Germany that has found that a border collie named Rico now understands more than 200 words and can learn new ones as quickly as many children. And so they say that's good news for those of us who talk to our dogs. Now, if this dog has a vocabulary of 200 words, that means he has a larger vocabulary than Tony Soprano and all of the rap artists in America put together. They seem to be stuck on one letter, words that begin with an F. I don't know why, but they make a lot of money at it. But Rico understands more than 200 words, and that's interesting. So the researchers have proven that people who talk to their dogs are cutting-edge communicators, not just a bunch of eccentrics. Now, the researchers found that Rico knows the names of dozens of play toys and can find the one called for by his owner. And this dog has a vocabulary size about the same as apes, dolphins, and parrots, trained to understand words. But as I say, his vocabulary at 200 words is definitely larger than those of all of the Goombas on The Sopranos when you add it up. But it's a very popular show, and people make millions of dollars an episode for speaking as few words as possible. So it just shows you that the more words you know doesn't mean that you make more money. In fact, in America today, the less words you know, you make more money. In fact, those who know fewer words make more money. That goes for politicians who speak in sound bites, and that goes for actors who speak in approximately 50 to 60 words maximum. And that, of course, goes for rap artists who have a vocabulary of about 40 words, and The Sopranos who have a vocabulary of about 73 words. So the old adage of, you know, literacy may be gone with the wind. Maybe it's an endangered thing to do is teach your children a lot of words. Maybe you shouldn't teach your children a lot of words. Have them watch Howard Stern's show and to abuse the mentally ill. They'll get very far in the world that they're growing up in. The researchers put several known toys in the room, along with one that Rico the dog had not seen before. From a different room, Rico the dog's owner asked him to fetch a toy, using a name for the toy the dog had never heard. The border collie was able to go into the room with the toys and 7 times out of 10 bring back the one he had not seen before. The dog seemingly understood that because he knew the names of all the other toys. He figured the new one must be the one with the unfamiliar name. So it just shows you, 200 words now, and that means that if you're talking to your dog, you really do have man's best friend. Man's best friend.
Give me fuel, give me fire, give me that which I desire.
You're listening to an encore broadcast of The Michael Savage Show.
I'll take calls on anything that you want, whatever, movies, food, what kind of engagement ring to buy, what's the best shoe made, the best boat. I feel like giving advice today. Mike, can you tell me what kind of shoes to buy? I've turned the age of 40 and my arches are starting to... Please, if you call on that, I'm quitting. George in Sacramento, welcome to the Savage Nation.
So, Father Savage, I have a 18-foot runabout in the Delta. Would it be a death wish for me to take that out through Benicia and run it into the San Francisco Bay around Alcatraz?
You're asking a loaded question. You used the word death wish. I didn't, right?
Yes.
George, on a calm day, yeah, but by the time you got from the Delta down to the Bay, the weather would change, right?
More than likely.
Yeah, and it changes very rapidly here, and I wouldn't recommend going out on the bay in an 18-foot boat unless your middle name is Nanook. All right, thanks. No, I wouldn't go out on the bay in an 18-foot boat. No, not me. No, 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 sir. Next case. Good time, Charlie. I saw a piece of a movie I saw before, 1945, black and white, Turner Classic Movies, TCM. No, I forget it already, the name. Why did I bring it up? Well, I don't even know. Barbara Stanwyck, where she builds up a restaurant and the husband's dead at the end. She's like, the husband leaves her. She's broke and she got a snotty daughter and the other daughter dies. Very good movie. I love the early L.A. scenes in 1940s L.A. All the men wore a hat. Everyone had like haberdashers in those days. The women wore gloves and suits. The streets, there were no gangbangers with tattoos running around the city. It was an amazing city. Hats, gloves, normal. You caused trouble, the LAPD beat you up and threw you down into a waterway and could cut down crime in Burbank and Pasadena. They were garden centers. Now they're shooting galleries with drive-bys. Wonderful. Isn't it great? Isn't America a great place? Wonderful place. Oh, America's much better now that it's highly diverse, particularly California, bankrupt and crime-ridden with broken roads. Tremendous. And that moron Strudel eater, the governor, says that illegal aliens who are sucking us dry have nothing to do with the deficit. You hear this? What a putz. What a schmuck. You know, if he had any brains, he would say, well, they don't account for the whole deficit, but a part of it. The schmuck comes out and says they account for none of it. The health care alone for the illegal aliens is about $18 billion a year. It just shows you what he got between the ears. You know, too many pastries over the years. Get at it. Don't even call me on any of this.
Savage. Warning. The
Michael Savage Show contains adult language, adult content, psychological nudity. Listener discretion is advised.
And now, America's most exciting radio talk show, The Savage Nation. Here is Michael Savage. Michael Savage Show.
I really want to talk about the world through a frying pan. And the reason I want to talk about the world through a frying pan on the Savage Nation is because if you have an open heart and an open mind, you can see the world through a raindrop. Now, I saw it through a frying pan because I went today. Well, let me back up a bit. Last night I cooked a paella. I got fed up with eating out. I can't take it. It's not the restaurants. It's not the owners. It's not the food. I realized why I don't like restaurants. It's listening to other people talk. My problem is that I cannot tune things out. My problem is I'm in the radio business and I have very sharp ears. My problem is that I actually hear what people are saying. My problem is I hear the conversations coming from other tables and I lose my ability to eat. So I decided to start cooking at home again. I know you want to talk about the Obama health care plan. Please, give me a break. I'd rather talk about diapers and how to change diapers than anything about Obama. Watch Obama run. Here's Obama apologizing in the Middle East. Watch Obama's new dog. Here's Obama having a meal. Look at Obama on Broadway. Here's Obama running. Here's Obama playing. Leave me alone already. Get the coloring book. You know what I mean? Get the Obama coloring book and just leave me out of it. So as I say, last night I decided to cook. Now, you got to understand, if you cook at home, it's an all-day process. First, you have to shop in the morning. Then you have to think about what you're going to do, blah, blah, blah. So last night, I cooked a dish that I've perfected over the years called paella. Many of you know what it is. It's basically a Spanish, you know, rice dish. On the one hand, it's very simple to cook. On the other hand, it's very complex to cook, like anything else. I mean, a scrambled egg is a scrambled egg is a scrambled egg? No. Because there's a way to make a scrambled egg that's not like a scrambled egg. It's called piperati. It's a Spanish scrambled egg that takes about 40 minutes to make. I made that in the morning. I realized since I enjoy food so much, I would cook paella. So what I did was, by the way, Spanish is all of a sudden in. Spanish is into Italian. Everyone's getting a paella pan. They don't know what to do with it, but they got one hanging in the kitchen. So I cook paella, and I use the pan I've had for 30 years. It's not a paella pan, by the way. It's a very large stainless steel skillet with a glass top. And I'll tell you my secret in a minute. But today I went into one of those fancy cooking stores that has all these items that you think you need but you never use. And I remember my mother cooked on a four-burner electric stove in a kitchen you could hardly walk through, and she turned out three gourmet meals a day, twice a day if she had to, on four electric burners with aluminum pots. But we go into these stores and we buy thousands of dollars worth of kitchenware that we never use. So I went in and was thinking of cheating on my 30-year-old skillet. I was looking at new varieties of the same pan. Some were deeper, some were shinier. Some had elaborate scroll work on them. Some had incredible handles on them. And the more I thought about it, the more I rejected each new item. I said, well, what's wrong with the pan I've got? It's worked for 30 years. I think I'll just keep it. Well, an elderly lady who works at the store and I had a chat about frying pans, and so she showed me the varieties of stainless steel skillets, and then she showed me the latest variety of skillet. And she said, I said, but that's a non-stick surface. I don't want that. She said, yes, but this is a non-toxic non-stick surface. It doesn't release any particles. And I said, well, my body has gotten used to these non-stick particles, and I don't think my body would do very well without an occasional particle of non-stick surface in my cells. And we both had a big laugh over that. And I said, you know, you and I grew up in the same generation. Apparently today they're afraid of everything. There are so many filters, filtered air, filtered water, filtered words, filtered teaching, filtered thoughts, so that when a child is exposed to a single bad word, they fall apart crying and wonder where mommy is. They can't even play tag now with Big Mommy watching over them. The police state of Mommy. We both laughed over that as well. Then I told her a story of a time when I was a child and my father took me by the hand through the meanest streets of New York's Lower East Side where he had a small store. And if I recall, it was during the polio epidemic. And he said to me, don't worry about it. By exposing you to all of these germs, you're not going to get polio. Of course, I didn't get polio, thank God. But the fact of the matter is, recent studies have shown that children who grow up in houses that have the least amount of dust and the least amount of antigens are generally the sickliest. That is precisely because, as my father taught me, children who are not exposed to various microorganisms or antigens don't develop the capacity to resist them when they are. In fact, it reminds me of another story, which was the arrival of the European explorers into the South Pacific. Hardy men like Greek gods. Healthy, hardy Greek men like gods were the locals, particularly in the Marquesas, a place I've been to many years ago. The men looked like, just like Adonis. So the seamen from Europe arrive, and they bring various European diseases that the local people in these islands had never been exposed to. And subsequently, 90% of the population acquires the disease and dies. I think it was, I don't want to guess wrongly, I've forgotten by now. The point is they had no immunity to this disease, although they were strong as gods, because they had not developed any immunity to the new diseases that were brought in by the European seamen. They got the diseases and died. Same thing, you need to expose yourself and your children to various and sundry. And so here we are coming full circle. Which frying pan should I buy? The lady and I then went over to the ironware section, and she said, aha, now that's the stuff that the West was built on. Yeah, and I said, I remember the days when it was said we needed ironware, cookingware, in order to get a bit of iron in our food. She said, yep, that's where True Grit came from. The men had steel in their bodies, and we had a laugh over that as well. And I said to her, you can see the world through a frying pan if you look carefully enough. And she said, is that your next book? And I said, wait a minute, do you know who I am? She said, no. And I replied, well, I'm a famous author and broadcaster. She said, well, I'll have to look for that title. I said, I think you'll be waiting quite a while for it, as I walked out of the frying pan store. That's it. Well, what do you want, something profound? I gave you something simple. That's all. Now, you want to do politics? Latest survey from the Wall Street Journal says 7 in 10 people said they had concerns about federal intervention into the economy, including Barack Hussein Obama's decision to own General Motors Corporation. And more government involvement in health care. The British have had state-run health care for a long time, and they're abandoning it, moving toward the model of the HMO. I don't think you understand that. The British have experimented with socialized medicine, and owing to public discontent, they are abandoning their model, and they are replacing it with the sort of HMO that you may be a part of right now in America. Think of the Kaiser Hospital. While Barack Obama is such a doctrinaire throwback Marxist of the college variety, he doesn't even understand that the British have abandoned the very medical system he's trying to impose upon America. He's not saying we should have HMOs. He's not saying we should have that type of reform. He wants to have the retrograde reform that was tried and has failed in Britain. Why? He's a doctrinaire throwback neo-Marxist academician. A lot of words, I understand that, but they have meaning. 1-800-449-8255 is the phone number. MichaelSavage.com is the website. There are other stories that can agitate you, many. I don't know that I want to do it. I don't know that you want me to do it. Barack Obama has failed every test thrown at him. North Korea is threatening nuclear war. He did nothing. Now you say, well, what could he have done? He could have done what George Bush could have done, who didn't do it. George Bush chickened out and failed. George Bush could have stopped Kim Jong-il by launching missiles from missile cruisers and destroying the launch pads. He could have stopped them cold. Bush didn't do it. Bush became what he was toward the end. Bush became what he always was toward the end. So now you say Obama's different. He's no different. He's following the Bush doctrine with regard to North Korea, which is look the other way and put your head in the sand. Iran. Why is Obama saying nothing to support the democracy movement in Iran? You say, well, he doesn't want to meddle in Iranian affairs. Then why is he meddling in Israeli affairs? Why is he kicking Israel around and saying nothing to the two tyrants in Iran and North Korea? You'll have to analyze that one. You'll come to the same conclusion I have. So where has Obama succeeded? Let's be fair. He's a nice-looking young man, means well, speaks well, has a nice family. So what? that's enough of a reason for me to support him? You got to look at what he's doing and what he's not doing and where he's leading us. And I am telling you that where he's leading us has been tried before. It has been tried in many nations before. And the question is how far down the Marxist path he will take us. Not if. There used to be a saying in San Francisco, not whether a bar will make money in San Francisco, but how much money a bar will make in San Francisco. It was a given that any bar in San Francisco made money. I guess it was a city filled with drunks. It was the last stop on the American Express. San Francisco was the end of the empire, where many people came here who had nowhere to go, and they just drank themselves to death. Some came here, and they opened their minds and did great things with themselves. I'm an example of that. I took advantage of the openness of this society and rose to the very top of my chosen professions. The fact of the matter is, though, it's filled with destitute individuals, not just homeless, but burned-out middle-class people. So there used to be a saying about San Francisco bars, it's not a matter of how much, whether they will make money, but how much they will make. Now, the same thing can be applied to Barack Hussein Obama. It's not a matter of whether he is a Marxist, but how much of a Marxist he is. We don't know. We honestly don't know where this ends. We only know that we're on this road. Now, it's been tried in other nations. It's been tried in 1917 in Russia. We know where that led. This agenda has been tried in many other nations. We don't know whether this will be a benign Marxism or a dictatorial Marxism. We have no idea where it ends. I want to remind you that it's not Obama himself that I have trouble with, but the people around him. He himself may be a fair-minded guy, not even understanding how far he's dragging the nation to the left, although I think he does know that. I got to take a break. I'll be right back. The world through a frying pan. That's right. That's right. Make your own paella. First of all, no one uses saffron in a restaurant. It's too expensive. What they use are coloring matters and cheap crocus rather than the actual saffron. I have a lot of good saffron, and the paella is good, but you don't want to eat it too. I mean, saffron's hard to eat every day. What I love is it's basically a peasant fisherman's dish. They turn it into a gourmet this, gourmet that. You have to buy $5 million worth of products to make basically rice and whatever seafood the fisherman caught and threw into the pan cooked on a wood fire. Everything they turn into a shtick. Like, you got to be a genius to make it. I lived in Spain for a while. Remember, they made the workers. They made a fire out of some wood and whatever they found on the beach. They had a rusty old pan. They threw in some rice. They toasted it. Then they threw in whatever, this shellfish. They all mixed it together, whatever they could find in, a little of this, a little of that. Then they threw in the rice and covered it, and that's the end of it. And, you know, now everybody's an expert on paella. But I don't know if you want to talk about politics. I could do it. I mean, I have my own little trick. I don't think I'm going to give it to you. You know that they say that the most desirable kind of paella, a rice dish, is when it's toasted on the bottom. You know how the kids always like to eat the skin of a turkey? They always want the turkey skin, right? The crisper, the better. And we used to eat it when we were young. Now, oh, don't throw the fat away. Throw the skin away. Everything, all the good parts, throw away. Throw the feet away. Throw the fat away. Don't bring the gizzards home. I would rather it be made in a factory. I want a stainless steel turkey, you know, from the imaginary kitchen that had no guts. But anyway, so it's the same with the rice. Theoretically, the bottom should be caramelized. The bottom of the rice in the pan, the most prized part of the dish is the caramelized rice on the bottom. Not black, not burnt, but caramelized rice. Very hard to do because usually if you cook it sufficiently, it'll burn on the bottom in order to cook the top, no matter how many times you stir it. So I developed my own trick, which I'm not going to tell you. I think I'll sell the advice in a cookbook. I don't know what I want to talk about. I mean, leave me alone already. I drank an old bottle of wine. I got a mild headache. I can't drink wine this time. Yeah, it's terrible. I have the greatest wine collection of my life. I finally built it up. I can't drink any of it. I'm still back to beer and vodka. And I try to change it. All right, there's a bottle that you found that you used to drink. wonderful white wine, a smasher on me. You wouldn't believe it all night long. A nightmare headache. But that's not why I want to do. Don't want to do politics. What do you want me to say? What's there to say that you don't already know? North Korea is threatening nuclear war, and we're doing nothing. We're talking about socialized medicine. Obama rushes to Chicago to tell the doctors why lawsuits against doctors are good. And they boo him, and they cut the booze out of MSNBC. You hear this? The media is more controlled here than it is in Iran. At least they can protest in Iran after a presidential election. We had Acorn fix the election. No one said a word. If you say anything, they call you Nazi here in the country. I don't know what you want to talk about. I mean, I can do politics. North Korea every day threatens nuclear war. We know what it is. I know what it is. China, the junkyard dog is called North Korea. Make it growl to frighten anyone in the administration who says anything about the Chinese currency manipulations or their dumping of products on America, destroying our manufacturing base. So the next day, threatens another nuclear war. And I love Hillary Clinton, a really functional Secretary of State. We've passed the law that's full of no teeth. It's like a toothless old woman, the what they passed in the UN. He really cares what they say in the UN. I'm not depressed out of all of this. Whatever happens, happens. I become fatalistic at this point. I expect the worst. That's all. I expect the worst out of my government and out of the world. So therefore, whatever happens, happens. You think it can't happen here? It is happening here. Everything you ever feared about America is now happening to this country. Ask Timothy Geithner. He's a genius. He runs the U.S. Treasury. He's your protector of the currency. He's so smart he had to rent his house out in one of the five towns in New York. Timothy Geithner, U.S. Treasury Secretary. Can't even stay in his own house. He'll protect you. But let's go to the next genius. The man who runs the Federal Reserve, another reliable source. Yeah. Well, let's go to the next one, the next professor who can't run a lemonade stand, let alone a souvlaki stand. A stainless steel hot dog stand in Manhattan is more complex to run than you would imagine. I can guarantee you if Obama was told, I'll tell you what, we want to see if you really know what you're talking about. Most of us don't trust a word you say. So here we're going to, here's a hot dog stand for 3 months. What we want you to do is run it at a profit. He said to you, what's a profit? I don't know what a profit is. All I've done is push paper all my life and give people the wind, the hot air. That's why I'd rather talk about the world through a frying pan.
Savage.
Yes, it's me and I'm in love again. Had no love and say you'll know when. You know I love you. Yes, I do. And I'm saving all my love in jail for you. Need your loving and I need it bad. Just like a dog when he's going mad.
That's my radio. Right over my left I got a picture of my father above me, my brother below him, and Fats to the... Go ahead, sing it, man. You know what this is like? I decided I was going through a phase. I think I've come out of it. This is what I was trying to tell you last week. Is like you can get depressed, and if you live through it, just ride it out like a storm, you're going to come out of it okay. Just don't use drugs, because you're never going to come out of your depression. They're only going to make you worse. And so... this is like raking sand. You know, years ago I read that Zen masters at a certain point in their life, if they lived, let's say, in a house with a walled garden, they'd get up every morning and they'd go out in their garden, and they had a garden of sand, and they would take a rake to the sand, and every day they would rake the sand a certain way to create a certain pattern. And that's what they did. They raked the sand. They say, well, what are they, crazy? In many ways, many of our lives are like raking sand when you think about it. Particularly if you're lucky enough to live in have a life rather that's rather regular. I try to tell you that a regular life is to be revered. The super exciting life at a certain point is to be avoided. Now, I've read many biographies as I was growing up. In fact, I read too many biographies. I try to model myself on too many people until I put down all the books and said, you know what, just lead your life because you got to throw the books away. But I was an avid reader of biographies. I don't remember. Tolstoy by Troy Ott, the Hemingway biography, you name it. And I loved big. The bigger the better, always in hardcover. And you know, when you're young and impressionable, you read a biography, you think you're them. It's like I told you, like walking out of a movie theater on a Saturday night when you're a kid, where you are the actor, you're still in the movie, right? Well, you walk out of a book, you're part of that, the book's part of you. And at a certain point, you just have to lead your own life. You know, you'll find out that some of the biggest risk takers when they were young became some of the most conservative. Notice I didn't say scared. There's a big difference between scared and being conservative. And that's something that's not well understood by the phony liberals in our society who think that they're the wild, crazy ones. They're the status quo. The liberals today are the status quo. They are the conformists. They're the ones involved in groupthink. They take no chances whatsoever, mentally or any other way, maybe the other way. I don't know that I can't generalize, but they take no chances mentally. They say the safe thing. They may as well live in Iran where the party approves, you know, what they say. And so I say to you, at a certain point, you take some of the biggest risk takers. I was thinking of one who, as a youth, it was Charles Lindbergh, who, as you know, flew the Spirit of St. Louis across the Atlantic. He was the first to fly a solo plane across the Atlantic. While I was reading his biography, as he got older, he became extremely cautious in most everything he did. Not frightened, but cautious. He came to realize what kind of risks are involved. Now, you can say, well, that could cripple you. I understand that. Well, that's your challenge to figure it out. So what I'm getting at is I'm getting at nothing. It's like raking sand. At this point in American politics, I feel as though I'm raking sand. On one hand, I'm indifferent. On the other hand, I see what's coming. And on the third hand, when there's no opposition party and the media is in the hands of a dictator, what you will have is a dictatorship. So that's why I'd rather talk about the world through a frying pan or a paella recipe or depression. You know, if you want to do politics, I'm capable of it. Trust me. Jennifer, San Francisco, KDW, go ahead, please. You're on the Savage Nation.
Hey, Michael, I'm just wondering when we are going to rise up and ask for impeachment, this mockery of a president. What he is doing is unconstitutional. I'm finishing up law school right now. There's just no time to wait. It has to happen now. We can't wait another
year. Well, you could have a movement to impeach Obama. I don't think it'll go anywhere because the Democrats control Congress. After all, they tried to impeach Bush for years. Did they get anywhere?
Well, I agree with that, except for the Democrats like one thing more than being in power, and that's having the power. And if they know that we are that pissed off about this, that we will vote them out, I think there might be...
Well, that's interesting what you just said. They should understand that they're going to be thrown out of office. They're going to lose their control in the next 2 years. There's a revolt going on in this country. The Gallup poll showing that conservatives are the largest voting bloc in America, yet we have a man to the exact opposite in the White House. We have policies to the exact opposite of the electorate in the in other words, the people and the administration are as far opposed as they have ever been in America. So you can predict that in the next midterm elections, the congressional Democrats are going to lose many seats. So you're arguing that unless they change things right now, they're going to lose power and therefore they might?
I think that's the only way.
Do you think that congressmen who are this corrupt and have never had as much money in their lives coming through their hands through TARP money and whatnot, you think they're going to give up a dime of that graft in order to make sure that they stay in office? Why should they care? They're raking it in like they never raked it before. We would need 10 FBIs to keep up with the corruption in this country. I don't envy the head of the FBI at all. I don't know how many agents he would need to follow what's going on in this Congress right now. It's melting down like a banana republic. New York City, WOR. Hannah, welcome to the program.
Hi there. I just wanted to thank you for your discussion on depression on Friday. It changed my life. I have dealt with some depression at different times. And, you know, people have the usual kinds of things to say to get try these meds, do this, do that. And the way you put it, the way you made it seem as though this is something that we go through in our life. Throughout.
That's right. That you can't turn every downturn into a sickness. That's the medical establishment trying to medicalize every human emotion.
Yeah, and that was incredible for me because over the weekend as well, I was thinking about the whole idea of people who are endless pleasure seekers. I live in Manhattan, and that's all around me. And I'm on the young side, so there's a lot of partying and this and that. And I had a whole new framework to everything. So I feel like it made a real difference in my life.
Yeah, in other words, you took a deep breath and you said, okay, let me think of it from another point of view.
I really
did. What I'm getting at is, I mean, there are people who are clinically depressed to an edge that I don't think, by what I hear, you are. That's another story. But to tell everyone who has moods that go down that they're sick and they need to go to a shrink and get a medication is absurd.
Yeah, absolutely.
Let me ask you something. How did people live for eons without doctors and prescriptions? How did they live for so long? Well, you think they didn't have downturns in the Middle Ages during the Black Plague? They didn't all throw themselves off a bridge.
You're Your stories are so helpful.
How come they didn't throw themselves off a bridge during the Black Plague when the people were dying all around them? They didn't go to some crackpot shrink whose children are maniacs? 90% of the shrinks, you ever see their children, if they're married at all, what the children turn out? They're so smart.
Exactly. I wanted to say something, too, about paella. I am Puerto Rican, and we have something else in the bottom of our arroz con pollo. So this is called pigao. This is fantastic, and I think you should really try to make it.
What is it? On the bottom of the pan, it's also what? Caramelized, the rice?
Caramelized. Exactly. Except this is more from the chicken broth, and so there's, you know, some different kinds of...
I don't use water, by the way. When I'm making paella, I don't use water with the rice. I use... 3/4 chicken stock and 1/4 water for the liquid. Otherwise, it comes out too bland. But there's one big problem with most of these rice dishes. They're too oily. And therefore, you must avoid at all costs oversaturating the pan with oil when you start the chicken or the sausage or whatever you're putting in it.
Yeah, exactly. I also like to use these sofrito and recaíto. I don't know if that's something you have in the West.
I like the way you say recaíto, pecarito.
Yeah, it's delicious. You would love this. So
what's your problem, sweetheart? Why are you depressed?
I think I feel at odds sometimes with the whole, my contemporaries. I'm an artist. I'm an art teacher, and everyone around me, oh, Obama, oh, this.
Oh, so you're alienated from the robots, the lib robots, the
right,
geniuses who can't see reality when it hits them in the face.
Apartment in Manhattan. I never have used any kinds of, sort of like Puerto Rican angle to get anything that I have. And, so it's just kind of a disconcerting time to be a younger person in this society.
Yeah, I understand. But remember, this is interesting. A new Gallup poll came out. This is very important to you, to hear, and everyone else. Conservatives are the single largest ideological group in America. Now, wouldn't that strike you as odd in an age of Obama propaganda where you think 80% of Americans are communist progressives? Well, they're not. I linked it up from Gallup on my website. I'm suggesting that you realize you're actually in the majority, but you've been silenced by the media that distorts and twists everything, Anna, which is why people go crazy from this.
Right. Well,
all right, look, hang in there. Hang in there. Things are going to get a lot worse before they get better. No, I'm a total cynic again. I've been a cynic all my life, but okay, so expect the worst, and therefore, if it don't happen, you're lucky. Keep raking the sand. You know, think about what I said to you. The Zen masters would rake sand. They had sand gardens. You say, what are they? I learned this years ago. I couldn't understand it. What are those Japanese thinking, I thought. But when you think about it, it makes sense. Everything's orderly. You got a large, well, it could be small or large. It doesn't matter. They actually sell sand boxes with rakes for people who live in apartments. And the object is to delicately draw that rake across the sand and create a pattern. And what's the point? The point is that you have to learn how to focus your attention on what's immediately in your reality circle. Because that you can control. That you can make anything you want to out of it. I mean, what is an artist? Think about what an artist is. A person who is a really great artist is driven by many, many different forces within themselves. And they're not all healthy. Some of them are very destructive. In fact, one of the earliest artists I met as a child later turned out to be a murderer who was then gassed at the at Sing Sing. He was a very good artist. Very often, some very creative people are also quite criminal. Well, this has been written about. I mean, this is not unusual. I'm saying you have to be a criminal to be a great artist. But there have been many, many, many analyses of really good artists think like criminals, by the way. The difference is that the criminals actually only perform crime, whereas the artist inhibits the criminal impulse and puts it into his or her art. Now, what does it have to do with anything? I don't know. I'll let you figure it out. I'll be right back. I may have a small audience in terms of the nation. I understand that. I'm not an egomaniac. I have a big ego, but it's not out of control with the reality of who I am. Do I have an audience as large as NBC? No. As large as Katie Couric? No. Or as large as some of the other shows? No. But 8 to 10 million people listen to this radio show are not to be discounted and to be made into insignificant. They all vote. Remember that. Maybe I should print up a bumper sticker that says I'm a member of the Savage Nation and I vote. I'd like to know why it is that Obama can invite gays to the White House and cater to them because they pressured him, but he has nothing to say to the largest single voting group in America, which is the conservative vote in America. Why is it that he spits on you? Why is it that the neo-Marxist Obama administration spits on you and makes believe you don't exist? Why do they continue to cater to 1% of the population and spit upon 40% of the population? The answer is because you deserve nothing better than to be spat upon. The answer is because you don't stand up. The answer is because you're not organized. The answer is because you don't demand to be respected as a human being. The answer is because you don't tell them that you are a conservative and you vote. I can only do my radio show. It's good. It's good. Conversation. Conversation with verse. You realize what talk radio really is? Conversation when it's good. In the true sense of conversation, to converse, share verse. We're sharing verse. Admittedly, it's mainly me giving you my verse. But talk radio should be converse with verse. So if you've got some verse that you'd like to share with me, you know the phone number, right? San Francisco, David, welcome to the Savage Nation. Go ahead, please.
Hey, my grandfather had a full page spread in the Contra Costa Time food section 2 years ago for his paella. It's delicious.
Was he a Spaniard?
No, he lived in Valencia. He did business all over the world, Caracas, Venezuela, and he lived in Valencia for a couple years. And the men didn't go in the kitchen, but he snuck in one night, likes food like you, and picked up the tips and techniques. And he's about the same age, just turned 70 in April. So he perfected it over the years, and it is delicious. And
isn't it interesting that the paella is a dish that you can keep perfecting? You have to keep perfecting it, by the way.
You should never have the same thing twice at his house because he never writes.
Never. You can't make. My mother was the same way. My father would complain, why can't the pot roast be the way it was last night? She said it is. They'd have argument after argument over the pot roast. What he didn't understand is that cooking is an art, not a science.
That's true.
You're not producing. See, the reason people go into science is because they want some things that are absolutely proven to be known. For example, Linus Pauling once said the reason he went into chemistry is because it was the one science at the time, the one science where he can definitely know what he was looking at and what he was working with, meaning the elements, okay? Whether it be whatever the element may be, copper or lead, mercury, name the elements, it doesn't matter, name them all, periodic table of the elements. So he went into chemistry because it was an area where you could know for sure what you were working with and what you were seeing. Cooking certainly isn't a science. In that sense, it's an art. So don't try to turn it into a science. A cookbook is only a roadmap, but how you get there is how you can drive, you can stop, you can start, etc. Let's move on. I don't want to get too trapped into... Let's play Obama lying to the doctors in clip one.
Healthcare reform must be and will be deficit neutral in the next decade. Now, there are already voices saying the numbers don't add up. They're wrong.
Right. Here's a man who's done nothing in his entire life to make a dime. He said himself a few months ago that he does nothing but push papers around. The man knows nothing about meeting a payroll. The man has never produced a profit. But he says that those who say that socialized medicine will bankrupt America even further, they don't know what they're talking about. They're wrong, and he's right. There it is. That's Obama to a T. Because he says it must be true. How far are we away from Ahmadinejad with this guy? This is crazy. It is insane. We're going to go. We are bankrupt. Okay, we know we're bankrupt. We know that. They're printing money. I think gold will go up. I know that I shouldn't talk about it because I have an advertiser who I love dearly. And I have Swiss America stuff. But truthfully, people are saying gold could become $2,000 an ounce. Why shouldn't it? Why shouldn't it? When you have a press that's so distorted that a guy like Schlepp Smith on so-called conservative Fox Network is lauded over the weekend by Frank Rich, a commie leftist of the lowest order, who says that Shep Smith is the one conservative he trusts. That's because Shep Smith is not a conservative. Schlepp Smith is Schlepp Smith. It's so bad on Fox News now that they have Judith Miller, a New York Times columnist, going on Schlepp Smith's show, talk about the Iranian election. And she actually says we don't really know what went on in Iran. She says the other side has a point, too. It's unbelievable to me. Astounding. That's why I say you can see the world through a frying pan. The problem is I have to follow the act last night from last night. I can't cook again tonight. What a mess. Oh, my God. A mess in the kitchen you can't believe. When I cook, look out. I had 5 accidents last night during the cooking. Don't think it was that smooth and easy. If I had a cooking show, you'd have to have a hazmat team next to me. People have said to me, do a cooking show for years, you know, and to talk your politics while making a... I could do that. I could do it. Get the camera on me while I'm cooking, you know, the world through an omelet, whatever. Someone will steal it. What do I care? They couldn't do it like I could do it. A schmuck will take it. Imagine it's like Schlepp Smith trying to do a cooking show. He can make a boiled egg, maybe. That's about it. But I had accident after accident. A glass dish dropped. I thought the dog would go blind. Though the topper was at the end, I decided I wanted to clean the pot myself. Wow, what a job that is, cleaning a paella pan with, you know, burnt rice on the bottom. After half a bottle of wine. So I turned, you know, I have one of these faucets in it that has a built-in filter, a Moen. Moen, they were like hot 10 years ago. I don't change too often. The other day I took the cartridge out. You change the cartridge when it says zero left. You know, you think that they're phony. They're not. The cartridge in this filter weighs like 5 times as much when it's used as when it's new. Why? Because all the particulate matter, mainly the heavy metals, that they claim are being trapped, in fact, are being trapped. Think about how happy your kidneys are for using a water filter like that in the house and your animals, man. Why don't they advertise? Call them up. Bill, call them up. Get them on the show. I like the sink top filter. So anyway, I have one of those things that comes out like on a long wire, you know? Like, you know the kind I'm talking about. So I'm cleaning the pan. I don't know what happened. The dog distracted me for a second. I looked down. He's always begging, looking up. The next thing I know, a jet of water, hot water that I was using on the pan, the thing spun around. It shot a fountain up in the air. It hit me in the undershirt right in the stomach. And the dogs were running away barking. The floor was filled with water. I said, this is too much. I think tomorrow night it's Japanese takeout. Easy. Sushi, a rice, and that's it. Boom. Finished. Over. Farted.